All right, we're looking at the book of Nehemiah, but just for a second, let's go back and review so we get the time setting and the history behind this. The children of Israel were taken into captivity. Why?
Disobedience.
What?
Disobedience.
Disobedience to the law. That's right. And what was, I guess, maybe the most heinous sin, if you can call it that, something God simply would not tolerate in the Old Testament. He's very, very gracious, but there's one thing he would not tolerate.
Idolatry.
And one of the early kings led them into idolatry. Who was that?
Jeroboam.
Before Jeroboam. Solomon married these foreign women. Intermarried. God warned him about that. Of course, he's a wise man. He knows better, right? But he married these foreign women, and they went into idolatry. The northern kingdom, all the 19 kings were no good. Had a few good ones in the south. So the northern kingdom went into captivity in 722, never to become a nation again. The southern kingdom, they didn't learn their lesson. And so God sent a nation against them because of their sins, not only idolatry, but they failed to observe the law in other areas as well. And God sent the Babylonians against them. First time that some of them were taken captive by the Babylonians was when?
586.
When did you say?
586.
No, that's third time. 605. All right. We've got to think backwards when we're thinking of those dates. 605. But then he came again in about 597 or 8, and then finally in 586, the third time. Now, what was so final about the third time?
Destruction
of Jerusalem. Destroyed the walls, burnt the city, destroyed the temple. 586. Who built that temple?
Solomon.
All right. So, 586. There was a prophet who had said that God would let them stay in captivity 70 years. Do you remember who that was? Jeremiah. Daniel read about it, Jeremiah. That's right. And so Jeremiah did, didn't he? And so about 70 years after the first captivity, what happened? Where were the people?
Still in
Babylon, but no longer under Babylon. Who are they under now? Persians, right? Cyrus. And so what happened about 70 years after the first captivity? What? That's right. Zerubbabel led the first return back to Jerusalem. That's right. Cyrus had issued a decree in the first year of his reign that they could return, and so they did. That was around 536. And when they went back in this first return, where do you read about this first return? What book?
Ezra.
That's right, first six chapters. And what did they accomplish? What were they, or they set out to accomplish and fail at first, but what was one of the purposes of their return?
Rebuild
the temple. That's right. And so they got back and they laid the foundation and completed it, what, in a year or two? Is that right?
20 years.
Why 20 years?
Because they stopped.
They stopped. Why did they stop? They just get tired?
Opposition.
Opposition. They had opposition. They got discouraged and frightened, and so they stopped. Somebody got them going again. Who was it? Two guys,
Haggai
and Zechariah, about 520 B.C. So they completed it in 516. Okay. So later there was a fella who was a scribe and a priest who wanted to go back and teach and institute reforms. And who was that? Ezra. Where do you read about his return? Ezra chapter 7, to the end of the book. That's right. And so he went back and began to teach and institute reforms. What was one of the major problems he encountered that he dealt with in the last two chapters of his account?
Intermarriage.
What got him into trouble? Intermarriage. Ezra's there, problem. But it was just among the peons of the group, right?
No,
it was among the leaders, wasn't it? And so that was dealt with there by Ezra. When did he return?
458.
Okay. And then, some years later, another fellow led a return. Who was that?
Nehemiah.
And when did he return? What, 445. Very good. And what was his purpose?
Rebuild
the walls around the city. And that's what we're studying about Nehemiah. And he got back and he encountered a number of obstacles, opposition from those that live in the land. But he did not let that stop him. He found difficulties because of injustices that were going on among the people. He didn't let that stop him. And so how long did it take him to complete his mission?
52 days.
52 days. That's recorded in Nehemiah chapter 6. Okay. And we'll get into some chapters here in our study now where they dedicated that wall. Now, in between the first return that Ezra records in the first six chapters and Ezra returned in chapter 7, another important event occurred. What is that?
Esther.
The book of Esther, story of Esther. And we'll be looking at that, the Lord willing, when we finish the book of Nehemiah. We'll probably have this class and one more on Nehemiah, and then we'll start the book of Esther. Might take more than that, but something like that. Okay, so that's where we're at. The wall's been completed, chapter 6, verse 15. And then it was completed in the sixth month. And then the seventh month rolled around, as you see at the end of chapter 7. And it was a very important month. And so there's some events that took place, the reading of the law on the first of the seventh month. And then they found out about the Feast of Tabernacles. That they should be observing, and you read about that in the last part of chapter 7. And so that was the 15th through the 21st, and the 22nd was a day of rest. And then chapter 9, where we studied in our last class on the 24th day of the month, they gathered together for a day of fasting and prayer and worship, and reading of the law. We see that in chapter 9 and first three verses. All right, so the rest of chapter 9 is the prayer that the Levites led in this prayer of confession and appeal to God. And that's what we studied in our last class. Now we're at the end of chapter 9. So here on the 24th of the month, they've had this, you see that in chapter 9, verse 1. They've had this day, chapter 9, verse 3, where they read from the book of the law of their God for a fourth of the day. Note that reading the law became a very focused part of their gatherings. We saw that in chapter 8. They read from morning till midday, and they asked for an explanation the next day and read. And then they read all the days of the Feast of the Tabernacles. And now here we find them a reading a fourth part of the day. And they confessed and worshiped the Lord their God. So reading the law, confessing their sins, and worshiping God. And one of the particular ways that they worship God that's recorded in the rest of the chapter is this prayer. Now, when you get to chapter 9:38 is where we pick up in our class today. The first phrase is, now because of this. So because of what? Well, we just read how they had read the law, fourth of the day. They confessed their sins and their guilt before God. They prayed for God it's their fault. We read this at the end of chapter 9, in verse 32, do not let all the hardship seem insignificant before you. We're at fault. Our fathers sinned. We've sinned. But be merciful to us. And so, they knew that their sins is what got them into trouble. And you see in verse 36, they still recognize they're under foreign dominion. We're slaves today. And they're under the Persian government. And so, because of all this, and so if we would read and we would remember our past and we would remember God's mercy and we would remember His greatness, and that the problems we have are due to the sins of our fathers and our own sins, we would want to be sure to not repeat those. And so they make a covenant. This version says we're making an agreement in writing. The American Standard says a firm covenant. The New King James has a sure covenant. We're making a covenant, an agreement in writing. So they're agreeing between themselves. And then it says on the sealed document are the names of our leaders. And they had seals with names on them that would be pressed into the document, would indicate that this person is a part of this document that is being made. And there's three groups mentioned. The leaders, the Levites, and the priest. Not to say that Levites and priests aren't also leaders, but there are some leaders who are not Levites and priests. So you've got these three groups. And it's interesting that these leaders took charge. And they led the way. They said, here's what we need to do. And that's the kind of leaders we need to have. People who will stand up, be counted, and lead the way. And that's what they did. So in chapter 10 and verse 1 is where we're at in our study today. And we ask you the synopsis of the chapter. And of course, it's the agreement of the covenant of the leaders that we're going to be reading about here in chapter 10. We're not going to read all of this, all these names. But we're going to at least observe some of the subdivisions of the chapter. Now, you'll note in chapter 9, 38, there's three groups mentioned. And then when you get to chapter 10, verse 1, as Nehemiah documents this for history, and you'll note that the very tone of this writing is historical. It's not a novel. In fact, there's things in here that if it was just reading for interest, who cares? The people outside, who cares? He's not writing this to sell this as a bestseller. This is a historical document for his nation and for his people. And you have the names of the people involved. This would be very important to them and in their history. And so it has on the very surface of it, the very face of it, as if it's intended to be that kind of thing. On the sealed documents were the names of, and you have two men in verse 1. Nehemiah, of course, is the governor. This other fellow, we don't know anything else about him, possibly a secretary to the governor. I do not know. But you have those two men mentioned. But then you have from verse 2 through verse 8 a list of 21 men. These are priests. You see that at the end of verse 8. These were the priests. So Nehemiah is making a list and he's putting this in his document for then and for succeeding generations. These are the priests who stamped their seal and thus signed by that their agreement to this covenant that's being made. You see in chapter 12 and verse 7, and you'll see some of the same names mentioned in verse 2 through 7, but you'll see that when you look at these same names in 12:7, these were the heads of the priest and their kinsmen. And the same thing in verse 12. The priests, the heads of the father's household. So these 21 names seem to be heads of families, not just 21 individual men, but heads of families and as representatives of their families. Do you remember that famous statement that Joshua made that we quote so many times right at the end of his life? As for me and my family. Would to God we had men who could stand up and be counted for those who might be under their influence. And so you have these 21 men, leaders in their families, priests. Then you have the second group, and so he mentioned up in 9:38, the Levites. So then in verse 9 through 13, you have 17 Levites mentioned. And they too, of course, signed the document that sealed their names to it. And then beginning in verse 14, now you have a third group of people here, and that the leaders, and you remember back in 938, that's the third group, the leaders. Now you have the leaders mentioned, and there's some 44 names in verse 14 through 27. So those are three groups now as it were, signed with a seal, as it were, this document, that they agree to the conditions of this covenant. All right, then it's interesting in verse 28, though. When you get down to verse 28, I ask you the question on the lesson, who joined the leaders in this covenant? How'd you answer that? Who joined them?
The rest of the people, the priests and Levites.
The rest of the people. And there's a qualification. The rest of the people. So not just the heads of the priests and Levites, but the rest of the people, and then people who weren't necessarily in that category. But there's another qualification in that verse. The rest of the people is the correct answer, but there's something said about the rest of the people that joined this document. What is said about them in verse 28? Okay, that's one of the things that's said about them. That's an important thing. It's those who had knowledge and understanding. But they had separated themselves from the peoples of the lands to what?
The law
of God. People who are dedicated to the law of God. They're not as interested in society and being accepted by society. This may involve social relationships. Certainly would involve intermarriage, as we see a little bit later here, and later in the book of Nehemiah. So people who are pledged that devotion to God is going to be their number one concern, those people. And so it separated themselves from the people of the land to the law of their God. And if the people of the lands saw that they separated themselves to the law of God, how might the people of the land view those folks? They think they're better than us. Who do they think they are? They think their religion's better? What's the matter with those people? Don't be intimidated by that. And but these people separated themselves from the people of the land to the law of their God. And it says their wives, and here's an interesting statement, their sons and daughters. Their sons and daughters, all those who had knowledge and understanding. Young people. Old enough to understand. They didn't have little children's classes back then. And so, young people, old enough to understand, were expected to understand. And you see that here. Sons and daughters. Sir? You mean their enemies?
Yeah,
their enemies might have thought that. So, they're joining their kinsmen, verse 29, their nobles, and are taking on themselves a curse and an oath. Now, this is an extended statement that Nehemiah makes, but it emphasizes what this covenant was about. He said to walk in God's law, but let's make it clear what he's talking about, which was given through Moses. And there may have been other people named Moses, but I'm talking about a particular Moses, God's servant. That's the Moses of the Exodus. That's the Moses that wrote the first five books of the Bible. And to keep and to observe all the commandments of God our Lord and His ordinances and His statutes. That sounds pretty authoritarian, doesn't it? Dedication to laws and commandments and statutes. These people must have not understood the grace of God. Right? How do you know that? You're right, they did. How do you know? You know they understood it.
Because they received it.
Huh?
They received God's grace.
That's right. Where did they talk about it?
Chapter
Chapter 9. They just prayed about it. Over and over and over again. God, you've been compassionate. You've forgiven us. Our situation's our fault. It's our sins. But you've been so compassionate, and we're asking for your compassion again. But because you believe in the compassion and the forgiveness of God does not give license to ignore the laws of God. Can those go hand in hand in the same heart? They can and they must. And you see that right here in this text. Okay. Now there are two things specifically mentioned that they said they would not participate in. Maybe because these things were particular problems in their history. For whatever reason, they singled out two particular things of the commandments and laws of God that they said they in this document they would not participate in. And we ask you that question on question number 4. What two things did they pledge they would not be a part of? What's the first one?
That their daughters married.
Intermarriage. That's right. This was what got them in trouble in the first place. Moses told them that, Deuteronomy 7, didn't he? But they wouldn't listen. Solomon, the wisest man on all the earth, but he wouldn't listen. And so they pledge that they're not going to intermarry. Isn't that great that they pledged that from then on, that was never a problem again? Isn't that great? We know it was a problem again, wasn't it? Read about it in the latter part of the book of Nehemiah. People can make a covenant, but that doesn't mean they're going to keep the covenant they make. Well, we see that all the time, don't we? People stand before an audience and say, I promise you to love and to cherish, to keep myself only for you, to honor you, for better or for worse, until death do us part. And it's not very long. That covenant means absolutely nothing. And so covenants are very important. And should we have to swear, take an oath to keep a covenant, to keep our word? No, Jesus said that's not the case. He didn't forbid taking an oath, but he said you shouldn't need to take an oath. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. And so covenant keeping, keeping our word, keeping our covenants, very important aspect of character for those that serve the God of the Bible. And one of the things in this prayer you see about this very God was that he was a covenant-keeping God. He kept his covenant with Abraham. He kept his covenant with Israel to bring him into the land. He also kept his covenant when they didn't obey him to punish him. He's a covenant-keeping God. If we serve this God, we ought to be a covenant-keeping people. All right, so that's the first thing. And then what's the second thing in verse 31? Well, that they would, they praise that verse 29, but there's a specific mention in verse 31, how that respect would be shown. What?
No commerce on the Sabbath.
All right, the Sabbath day and the Sabbath, what else? Year, the Sabbath year. The Sabbath day and the Sabbath year. Look, he said, will not bring any wares or any grain on the Sabbath day to sell, etc. And then look at the end of the verse. And will forego the crops the seventh year. That's the Sabbath year, the year of rest. And in that year, they were to let debts go free. No exaction of debt. And you can read about that. You probably have a marginal reference there in your Bible, Deuteronomy 15, first two verses. So the Sabbath. Now, when God instituted the Sabbath, by the way, when did he institute the Sabbath? At the creation? For they observe the Sabbath?
The law of Moses,
during the time of Moses. Actually, you first read about it even before the giving of the law. In Exodus 16. But look at Deuteronomy 5. to Deuteronomy 5, verse 15. What is the observance of the Sabbath particularly connected with, according to that verse? Deuteronomy 5:15. The Exodus. That's right. The Exodus. God delivered you out. Therefore, you're to keep the Sabbath. People say, we ought to keep the Sabbath today. I wasn't in Egypt. I didn't go through the wilderness wanderings. This is for the nation of Israel to commemorate that the God of creation created the earth in 6 days, rested the seventh day, is the same God that delivered them from Egyptian bondage. And so the Sabbath is not just, oh, God picked the day and said, here is a day of rest. It's significant to this nation, tying them to the God of creation and the God of the Exodus. And so they said, we're going to remember the Sabbath. We're going to observe the Sabbath. We're going to quit doing business on the Sabbath and buying from those who do business. We're not going to support them either. And then on the seventh year, we're going to observe God's laws about that as well. So those two things are mentioned, the intermarriage and then the Sabbath, Sabbath day and Sabbath year. All right? And so if you answered question two there, who joined the leader, or I mean question three, what they pledged to do, you answer verse 29, which we talked about. This is a general statement of allegiance and obedience to the law and keeping the commands of the law. But then these two specific things are mentioned that they would not participate in verse 30 and verse 31. Start in verse 32 now, and you see another obligation that's part of this agreement, and it might be something we don't give the proper emphasis to, but it's very important to them. There's a phrase that occurs all through this section, from 32 through the end of 39. And the last statement, verse 39, tells you what this section's about. Read that last statement. You see what it says? Thus, we will not neglect the house of our God. That's what this whole section's about. And it's not just the building. The temple was rebuilt. But it's not the structure. It's the worship of God that took place there to keep them focused on God and who He was and His care and His provision. Many people in religion today want to say, I love God, but they don't want to be involved in acts of worship. So I can serve God and I don't have to observe the Lord's Supper and sing and pray with others, go to church and all that. I know that these people, God set up a system with acts of worship in the house of God that were to unite them to God, to remind them of God. And you see this all through this section. And they had neglected it, and it was being reinstituted by Nehemiah. It's very important to the welfare of this nation. We read that Nehemiah came back to rebuild the walls. He's interested in the security of this city. And then in chapter 7, you remember in the first part of chapter 7, what else about the city he saw that needed to be addressed? What was it? Population of the city, remember? There weren't enough people there. And so he addressed that, and we'll pick that up in chapter 11. So he's concerned about the welfare of this people, their nation. And now you have this they had the reading of the law in chapter 8, Feast of the Tabernacles. And now you have this concern that Nehemiah has about the house of our God. We don't have a temple building, that kind of thing today, that's true. And the analogy in the New Testament is God's people is the temple of God. This isn't the temple of God, this building we're in. That's not the point. The point here is that there was a system God set up for these people of acts of worship that were designed for their good. And Nehemiah sees that this is to be provided for. So note that as we began in 32, I have on your sheet, they committed themselves to provide for public worship and for those who served in that capacity. And So, I ask you, do you see any connection between this and the covenant and the obligations? They make this covenant. What's going to help them remember that covenant? What's going to help them keep that covenant? These very things. the worship of God, the offerings, the sacrifices, these very things will help them and be reminded of their obligation to God. Okay, so first of all, in 32 and 33, we say, we also placed ourselves under obligation to contribute yearly 1/3 of a shekel. Now note how many times we're going to emphasize it as we read through. He talks about the service of the house of God or the work of the house of God. For the service of the house of our God. For the showbread, for the continual grain offering, for the continual burnt offering, etc. These things required money. They required provisions. Who's going to do it? We're going to see that those things are provided. It's not money because it's not just, well, it's toot and tell or go to hell. It's not that kind of thing. You know, it's not I got to go contribute so I'm happy. It's, I want to have a part in providing for something. It's a fellowship. And I want to provide for these things. So, showbread, grain offering, burnt offering, Sabbath, new moon, these are things the priests were to do. And this shouldn't fall on their shoulders to provide all these things. And the people are going to provide this to provide for those things. Note at the end of 33, for all the work of the house of our God. And when you get to 34, he says, we cast lots for the supply of wood. A lot of offerings going on. Where's the wood going to come from? Who's going to get it? Well, let the Levites do it. That's their job. But look, he said, we cast lots for the supply of wood among the priests, the Levites, and the people. They might bring it, now here it is again, to the house of our God. You see how many times he uses that phrase? According to our father's household at fixed times annually to burn on the altar of the Lord our God as is written in the law. Now when you get to 35, I presume there's an ellipsis. And I tell you why that ellipsis is something that's left out. In fact, several versions have supplied what they think is an ellipsis. If you've got the New King James Version, for example, if you're reading from it, you have some italicized words in verse 35. It says, ordinances. And we made ordinances. Well, that's not in the text. Or that's left out. But in other words, they didn't cast lots for these other things that are started in 35. That's simply the obligations you had as a worshiper of God. The first fruits, the first of your children, these other offerings, that firstborn of our sons and our cattle, first of our dough, 37, contributions, all of that, the tithing. You don't cast lots, say, well, let's see if I tithe or you tithe. No, everybody tithes. And so the translators, recognizing that, have tried to supply some of them in ellipsis. That's what the New King James does. The New International Version, of course, it's a looser translation, but anyway, they have said, we assume responsibility for, and the New Revised Version says we obligate ourselves. And so when you get to 35, here are things that they say, okay, we're going to get busy and take care of our duties in these areas. And so you have the shekels for these things in 32 and 33, but these things in 35 following. If you was to go back and read in the book of Numbers in chapter 18, these things were the things that helped to support the priest. And then the tithes helped support the Levites. And then the Levites tithed to the priest. This was God's method for providing for them. When we get to chapter 13, you'll see what happened when this wasn't followed. The Levites said, chapter 13, they went to their fields. They had to do something to feed their families. God said, that's not what I want. I want them to be dedicated to their work. And so he provided for the priest and the Levites, and these first offerings that were brought of their grain and firstborn of their children, all these kind of things, helped serve for the priest and some for their families. All right. So you have 32 and 33, the shekel for these things that are needed in the public worship. And then 34, the wood for the sacrifices. And then all these other things. And you'll see at the end of, well, look at 36. Bring to the house of God. There we have again, bring to the house of God. Look at the end of 36. For the priest who are ministering in the house of God. This is for the priest, ministering in the house of God. So they brought it to God, but God gave it to the priest. Read that in Numbers 18 if you wish. That's where it talks about that. And so 37, You see again, the first of our dough, our contribution, fruit of every tree, etc. But note, he says, to the priest at the chambers of the house of God. And so he'd be brought, put in storerooms there for the priest. And portions of that would be used in worship. Portions of it would go for the support of the priest. And then, at the end, at the middle of 37, he says, and the tithe of our ground to the Levites. So one-tenth of your produce, or if it was a herd, your herd would go to the Levites. And the Levites are they who receive the tithes in all the rural towns. The priest, the son of Aaron, shall be with the Levites when the Levites receive tithes, and the Levites shall bring up the tenth of the tithes to the house of our God. So the tithe and the Levites got the tithe, but then the Levites tithed the tenth of the tithes for the high priest. And so that's what God set up. You can go back and read about that if you wish. And so for the sons of Israel and for the sons of Levi shall bring the contribution of the grain, the new wine, the oil, I'm in 39, etc. But then we have it all summarized in the last sentence in verse 39. So if you want to know what that section is about, highlight, mark, somehow remember that last phrase in verse 39. Don't neglect the house of God. Evidently, Nehemiah thought that was important to the security of the nation. Folks, it's important to our security today. Not animal sacrifices and literal wood, but the worship that God has instituted for us is for our good. Singing together, praying together, reading the Word of God together, observing the Lord's Supper. That's for us. That's for our security. Neglect it, we're in danger. Any comments before we go to chapter 11? We'll cover chapter 11 quickly. Chapter 11, we picked back in 7:5. Look at 7:5. Start in 4. 7:4. Now the city was large and spacious, but the people in it were few, and the houses were not built. Then my God put it into my heart to assemble the nobles, the officials, and the people to be enrolled by genealogies. That's when he found the list. The list is recorded in the rest of the chapter. That's the same list as Ezra chapter 2. And now we pick up that effort. Remember, then the seventh month came and all those intervening events. Now you get to 11:1. Now the leaders of the people lived in Jerusalem, but the rest of the people cast lots to bring 1 out of 10 to live in Jerusalem. Where does that come from? That's from chapter 7. We've got to increase the population of the city. The people not only lived in the city, but they helped guard the city. Remember, people stood by their post or in front of their house to help guard the city. And so, while 9/10 remain in other cities. Now, the other cities, you'll see down in verse 25 through the end of the chapter. Talked about the other cities. But some volunteered to come and live in Jerusalem. And then he begins to list those who came. In verse 3, now these are the heads of the provinces who lived in Jerusalem. And then you have several categories listed right there in verse 3. 1, the Israelites. 2, the priests. 3, the Levites. 4, the temple servants. All those four categories, you have a list of those from here through verse 21, and then 22 talks about the overseer of the Levites in Jerusalem. So that's essentially what this is. A Levite, you see in verse 4, from the sons of Judah. So here's and also verse 7, Benjamin. So there's the Israelites. You see, he mentioned the Israelites. So he deals with the Israelites, verse 4 through 9. Look at verse 10. Back up in verse 3, said the priest. Look at verse 10, from the priest. Back in verse 3, said the Levites. Now look at verse 15. Now from the Levites. And then he talked about the temple servants, or the Nethinim. And you get to verse 21, and you read about them. So he said, okay, here are these groups. Now let me give you a list of them. Again, you see the nature of this historical document. All this was designed for the security of the city. And then, of course, you've got verse 22, the overseer of the Levites in Jerusalem. He's got him mentioned. to help regulate the things, those who were there in the city, and then the people who lived in the rest of the cities. Okay? Anything else about chapter 11? Yes. No, not all the priests and Levites lived in Jerusalem. They would come in their courses. Priests would come in their courses to take care of their particular duty, and Levites, same thing. So they didn't have to live in Jerusalem, but of course the service was in Jerusalem.
Did they only teach the people in Jerusalem at the temple, or or did they not? Was it not their job to teach?
I don't know of anything that would indicate it was their job to teach only in Jerusalem. What provisions they had, I don't know. The synagogues, of course, sprang up in the period between Malachi and the New Testament, where they had these synagogues and people would gather for that very purpose. What provisions were made before that, I'm not sure. Okay. All right, chapter 12. I've got 1 minute. You've got your sheet there. What section? What is this section about? I will note this. On your synopsis that I gave you at the beginning, it's different than the division I've got here. So if you still have that synopsis, you'll see that I've subdivided this section. 1 through 26 and 27 through 43, I've sectioned out the dedication of the wall. So you might compare those. We'll move again. It won't take us long to cover chapter 12, at least the first part of it. And we'll look at this. We'll focus more on the second part, this 1244 following. And that goes through the end of the book about reforms that Nehemiah established in the city. Okay, thank you very much.